Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher, and I'm joined, as always, by the OG panel. Christopher Somani. Hello, Christopher. How are you, my friend?
Terrific. Warm day today. We're in the cool front room again.
Yes.
When I say cool, I don't mean as in the vibe. I mean the temperature.
Do you not like the vibe?
That's all right. A wee bit of work to be done. I'm sure you would concede that yourself.
I would concede that myself. Thanks very much, Chris. We are working on the vibe in the front room. We're also joined by Alan Edgar. Hello, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. It's also nice to be in the cool front room.
You called it like the big room or the big house or something, didn't you? I'm going
to
go.
I did call it. It's nice to be in the main house as opposed to the wee studio.
Yeah. It's good.
Feels like part of the family.
Alan, you were, as mentioned last week, you were on holiday in glorious Donegal. Did you have a fantastic time, I'd imagine? Talk us through it.
I sure did. Just an incredible part of the world. Absolutely beautiful. I was only there 4 days, right enough, which wasn't anywhere near long enough, but packed plenty in, drank many, many pints, and seen a glorious Glasgow Celtic win and some live music right after from Gary Ogg, which just set the holiday off in a right cracking start.
Superb. Chris, you've been over to Donegal a number of times yourself. Highlights from over home?
Well, it's not my home.
Well, it's for me, so.
No, it's lovely. Highlights, you know, on the pints.
I mean,
scenery.
Is there any places that you go to, like any wee pubs or anything? Because you stay with our friend Neil's got a nice house over there. You hang out with her occasionally?
Once,
okay.
I can't remember the names of the pubs apart from, was it the Glen Bar? The Old Glen Bar, I think. Yep. You took a visit. It was a cracking wee pub. Yeah. So,
great restaurant.
Shout out to the Old Glen Bar.
Superb stuff. Glasgow, Celtic and Donegal, there's quite an interesting history in regards to players that have played there and obviously just amazing links and stuff. So if you ever want to go to that part of the country, we would highly advise. It's very good.
Visit Donegal with Chris Gallagher.
And use code CYNIC15 for 15% off.
No, 10%
CYNIC off. CYNIC25.
Oh, Jesus, it's going up. So great stuff, Alan. You got to see the game. Thankfully, we all got to see the game as well. We can talk briefly about that a little bit, but we're going to break the game down. We're going to talk about Ross County 1, Celtic 3, with some fantastic goals and some fantastic play as well. Then we'll do some news and stuff. We've got some bits that we want to go over, and then we'll look ahead to Kilmarnock versus Celtic at the weekend. Celtic travelling to Dingwall. I think we talked about it last week that it was going to be a. You were a bit worried, Alan, last week, just after having watched Ross County against Hearts at Tynecastle. What did you make of the game overall and the performance?
I was worried. You're absolutely spot on. But I think we, especially in the first half, obviously didn't get the advantage, but it felt like we picked up, you know, from the Aberdeen game, and almost as if we were starting to lift through the gears. Nowhere near our best. I don't think there's any doubt of that. But we look threatening. We look like we're really moving the ball with purpose. And we, at the moment anyway, it looks like that midfield and attack particularly, any time we pick up the ball, you feel confident that the players are able to do something, that it must be, if you try and look at it from the other point of view, from an opposition point of view, there isn't really a player in the team at the moment, particularly that team that started at the weekend. There isn't a player in that midfielder attack that you feel comfortable with having the ball. And I think that's always a big threat. And that hasn't been the case for, I think, under Ange Postecoglou's whole time, especially if you look back to this time last season. I think teams were able to game plan against us and look at us a particular way and say, here's what we want them to do. And that will happen to a certain extent now. You know, if Dyson Maeda is outside the box, for example, he's one that you can maybe drop off if you've got 2-on-1. But beyond that, there's really not a lot that teams can do. Some of the chances we created, some of the movement, I think it would be, you know, if you're Malcolm Mackay in Monday morning, Tuesday morning, I think a lot of it is you look at your players and you kind of shrug your shoulders and just say,
on to the next one.
Yeah, I mean, you'll analyse it and you always try and take the best from it, but you wouldn't be hard on your players. I think that is because, you know, it's when we get up to speed and when we start doing more consistently what we did in flashes, I think we will be impressive. So it was a bit closer than I felt it really needed to be. But I think going forward, I think we look threatening. And as we start to get match fit, as we start to get match sharp, I think we'll see a lot more. So I've been very encouraged by the opening two matches of the season.
Chris, your thoughts on the game, just in general?
I think we're still building up. You know, we're still kind of getting to terms with the pace and the tempo of the season, which is understandable, despite me thinking that that wouldn't matter. We would just get straight in and hit the ground running. No, but I think it was the performance went up from the Aberdeen performance without particularly hitting the heights. Now, we did, I mean, we controlled the entire game, we controlled the ball, we maybe kind of were, it wasn't a huge amount of clear-cut chances, but we maybe could have, you know, got a goal before we did. But what I did think, despite the fact when they equalised, I did what everybody does and you go, oh shit, you know, there's a real possibility we're going to lose points here. But looking at it a wee bit more coldly, the way that we were playing, eventually Ross County tired, because you can't cope playing against us that. You can't, it's really difficult to defend against us when we're doing that all the time. And I thought County looked well organised and things, but there was an eventuality to the goal. And then when the third one went in, you know, that was an accumulation of what had happened before that. So is it what we, the sparkling, beautiful football that we all predicted and wanted before the start of the season? No, but it's another step going towards that. You know, you can just tell we're just starting to oil up. We're just starting to... Well, so, wait a minute. That sounded a wee bit rude. Family podcast.
I mean, it is really hot here. So, Manny, I don't know what you're suggesting at this point, but...
We're just starting to oil the machine.
That's worse. I think that's worse, actually.
We're getting better week on week. So, yeah, it just seemed a step forward from the Aberdeen performance, which in itself wasn't bad, but I think we're just going to start to, you know, get better and better. And you know, that performance at the weekend was a good one.
I think as well that, I don't know, the kind of the soundings that have been taken from, you know, Twitter, when you talk to other people, when you talk to your mates, you know, if you listen to podcasts, whatever, I do feel as if people are maybe a wee bit underwhelmed so far with what they've seen. And
is that okay, though, at this point? As long as we're winning?
You can think what you like, to be honest.
Fuck up.
But I do think two games into the season, I think the one thing I'd point out is that those two fixtures are two fixtures you're glad to get done with. There hasn't been a... And obviously we don't know how the table looked at the end of the season, but I'd be very surprised if either Aberdeen or Ross County were...
Bottom six.
I think both of them, you know, County, it might be tricky, but they'll be there or thereabouts. Don't think either of those sides will be in a relegation battle. Mm. So we do dismiss pretty much every other team in the league, other than the other team that we kind of tend to vie for the title with. But you do break the league down, and we haven't had the gimme fixture at home yet. You know, Aberdeen at home isn't, I know we've got a really good record, but it's not a gimme fixture. And Ross County away can be a really, really tough place to go. So I think when you pair the level of opposition with the stage in the season that it's at, and this is, I think we talked about it last week, it is a very different build up to the season for us. You know, most of the midweek now for us is, I mean, I don't know what it feels like to you, but it feels really fucking long.
Yeah.
Purely because... we don't have a game. Normally at this stage of the season, we're two games a week, and it's, you know, you start and then you don't stop until the first international break. And whereas this season, it's different. I know the Champions League draw is soon, but we've still got, I mean, that's Saturday, then 8 days off until the next game. And that's, for us, that's kind of unheard of in August or September.
Yeah, I think we dismissed the lack of qualifiers. Well, not even dismissed. We just perceived it as a universally a good thing, which it is, because you don't want to be scrambling about at that stage of the season trying to qualify for Europe. But I think we discounted the sharpness that it gives us when we start the league campaign.
Yes.
Which is apparent so far. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with not being particularly wowed with what you've seen so far. But I think you also need to acknowledge that we are going to get better, and there's the nucleus of a more exciting team there. You know, it does look like we're a wee bit ring rusty, as opposed to we look bad. We're not turning in poor performances. I mean, the goal at the weekend was, you know, I mean, they hadn't had a shot in target, and, you know, you can dissect the goal itself in terms of whether you think it was good, bad or indifferent. But overall, the performance was of complete domination. It just wasn't as pleasing in the eye as we had maybe built ourselves up to expect. But I genuinely think that will come. But I think we're going to do a team. Now, I'm going to predict every week that it's going to be next week. Spoilers. But we're going to end up putting four or five goals past a team pretty soon, I think. I just think we need to build up to that a wee bit.
It's funny because you said, like, we're going to do a team, and then you said, like, put four or five. I mean, we put three past Ross County. And I know the last one was, like, kind of...
Did we not? I think we did. We got clarity in that. A gubbing involves at least four goals.
Of course.
Glad we clarified what a gubbing is on the pod this week.
In regards to... you know, I think you make a good point, Alan. Sorry, jump in.
Just when you mentioned that last goal from the third goal against Ross County, for a player that's kind of not in the starting 11... to come on and score a goal of that quality. I mean, that is a really, really good finish. Really tidy finish and prevented a kind of...
Will he be knocking on the door? Would it be knocking on the door Monday? I love that phrase, by the way, knocking on the manager's door. I absolutely love it.
Well, I hope it's literal. I hope Ange 1 has a door.
Like to an office?
Yeah, I would hope so. And that Abada does knock on it and says, if I'm not starting on Monday, wee man, it's going to be trouble.
Jesus.
I doubt that's the case. See, the thing about Abada, right, he's capable of that. He is, at times, just comes alive in the box.
Yeah.
But his overall performance, and there was one point where he just fell in the box about 10 minutes before he scored.
See, he's 20, he's 20, right? So it is a case of maybe you move him in, Alan, and you say... We're going to play as a striker, obviously. That I'm just trying to look at him from what are his strengths, and Sormani absolutely nails it. Like, he comes alive in the box and he scores goals, and he's actually got a really good finish. How do you look at him, and you maybe say, well, maybe you've got attributes that are suited somewhere else on the pitch, or would you do that? Because he is only 20. We keep forgetting that.
I don't think the solution is to move him anywhere else on the pitch, because the things that Leo Labad is not good at are things that you then are the reason that you shove players out wide. And that does sound disrespectful. There's no getting around that. But when you can't waste as many touches when you are playing in central midfield, for example, you need, your consistency has to be there. Whereas a winger, you're asking them to do things that other players can't do.
Yeah.
So you give them more leeway. I do think that I think that he will get plenty of game time this season. I think he'll get plenty of starts. And I think I do find him to be... Sometimes he's wasteful, especially outside the box. But he does just keep scoring goals, which does make it... You know, it makes it tricky because...
It's good goals as well,
yeah,
man.
We like to sit and talk about football, and we like to make out... Not make out, but we like to talk about it and think that we put players into nice, neat little boxes, and when we need this, we'll bring this guy in. Football's not like that. It really isn't. And see, if you've got someone that does have just an ability to score goals, you can call him what you like and call him wasteful, but see, if he keeps scoring goals, then you're probably going to start him at some point sooner rather than later.
I mean, there's parallels with a guy like Chris Commons. Now, I know Chris Commons is a dirty name these days to the Celtic support, but if you think back to when he was playing his best football or in his pomp at Celtic, wildly popular with the support. But quite literally, he did the exact same as Lyle Abad in a lot of games. He was non-existent, and then he would pop up with something very special. So, I was frustrated.
Oh,
with...
so Manny disagrees with it. Alan disagrees.
There's no consensus. He's not going to say something just now, and I'll go, absolutely, Alan, that's spot on. If he's talking crap, I'll tell him.
I think it's more...
Love it.
I get the kind of high level of... him and Commons, but I think the thing with Abada is that we need to, I think there's a responsibility to give him more game time, because at the age of 20, if he's producing that, I think the reason that people are excited by him is that if he's doing that at the age of 20, with regular game time and experience under his belt, at the age of 24, 25, he could be, if he sharpens up a lot of the elements of his game, and it is his all-round game, I probably agree with Samani in that I wouldn't start him yet, but it's not because I don't like him. It's that I think the team as a whole play better when they have someone else out there. But he is forcing his way in. And I think unless you can resolve the... And I think we maybe brought it up last week. Unless you can resolve the Maeda on the left and Jota on the right as your absolute nailed-on starters, which I think they were. But I think Jota still, in my opinion, looks better on the left. He just looks more comfortable on the left. And I think Maeda... I think hasn't had the strongest start to the season, but it is only two games in, and he showed more than enough in pre-season to show that he will be a real threat coming in off the left. But I still think Jota on the right,
I mean,
it's not, it just doesn't look as effortlessly yeah. easy for him as it does on the left. And I think you put a player like him in his primary position and you pick players around him, because he's a unique special talent. You've got Maeda, you've got Abada. Jota's output and his performance is in a different level. And I think you play him in his best position and then other guys can adjust.
See, agreed, yeah.
To go back slightly to talking about Abada, I'm probably being too hard on him. But so what, right? I've done it and I've said it, right? And he is still young. It's just, when I see that you know, what he's, you know, the goals and what he's capable of, you know, a lot of people find it dead easy to ignore a lot of the rest. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think his fluency really inhibits the team. Now, that might improve wage, it might not improve wage. I agree that we probably do have a responsibility in terms of giving him game time. If Abada is our backup right-sided forward, I have absolutely no problem with that. I think there's a gap there just now, and I don't think that's James Forrest. You know, we've probably talked about that in the past in terms of, you know, is he... Where is he just now and thing? I personally think he's maybe kind of gone past that, and maybe some of the players that we're linked with would suggest that we're looking for a player out there. But I think Jota is going to now play in the left. I think you're going to see that. I do think he's a far better footballer in the left than he is in the right, which leaves that gap there. Some people would be happy for Abada to grab that with two hands. I still think that we need a Jota. Saying that as if it's easy getting a Jota quality level player in the right. I think if we did, we would go up a huge level. And then if your backups are Maeda and Abada, that's not too bad at all. But I still think that's where the gap is, and I don't think Abada's ready to seize it despite the goals that he's capable of scoring.
That first goal was really just, we talked last week about just the actual joy of watching goals and watching Celtic score goals. Just how Jota made the space, beat two men, I think, and just the ball into the box, and then just Kyogo's finish. It's just like, I mentioned this on the agenda, like you can see the finish, and then you see it from the high angle, and it's just the intelligence that that Kyogo has to put it where he puts it. It's just, you know, you just pop for goals like that, not only because they're Celtic goals, but because of just how they're put together, Alan, and that does come from him being down the left.
Yeah, and I think it's because he's driving in his stronger right foot.
Yeah.
Because as a defender, then your fear is that he is going to... He's got the ability to go past you, but he wants on his right foot to shoot. So you will almost do everything in your power to, say, force him on his left foot, which is what Ross County did. But his left foot isn't as anywhere near as strong, but he can pick someone out and if need be. And on top of that, his touch is so good that he can stop the ball and then shift it onto his right, like, you know, he did for the goal. So it's perfect. So he's got the ability to do so many things. I think he looked like he was dying for a penalty, to be honest. I don't know if that's... It's very early in the season, and that's a lot of running. That's a lot of explosive running. And I think he was hoping for the contact from... I mean, so was that, to be honest. But you just see the ability he's got, and I think that's why... I don't know. He might be able to play out on the right. I think his crossing from the right is quite strong as well, but...
Do you think in the Champions League, where, you know, everything goes up a level, if he does have to kind of continually cut onto his other foot, do you think that'll become a cropper? Not become a cropper is the wrong phrase, but it'll be tougher for him.
He just can't... I think the thing is, one of the strongest elements of his game is that he manipulates defenders by driving inside and then them over-committing to prevent him getting on his right foot outside the box, which then opens the space up for the fullback. It opens the space up for other players. He can drop it off. On the right-hand side, he can go down the line, but you're not as... I don't think you would... be as concerned with that. You would try and stop the cross, but you'd fancy your defenders to be able to deal with that. So I think he's best on the left, but I think domestically you'll be able to interchange him. I think the point you make maybe about Champions League games is key, and I suppose by extension, you know, are bigger games in the league as well.
So any thoughts on that?
We mentioned it, I think it might have been last week or the week before, where it's only really come to prominence actually in the last few weeks, people talking about how much stronger Jota is in the left than he was in the right, because we played him in the right to accommodate Maeda, to be perfectly honest. Maeda had a real kind of reign of form, got rich reign of form, got some goals, and Jota by, you know, no definition, played poorly on the right. But it's only when you see the some of the most sparkling things that he did for us, like the goal away against Leverkusen, and, you know, that's me finished because I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
Left foot strike as well, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, see, for me, his most prominent spell for us when he was playing in the left, and then when he played in the right, as I said...
Dropped off a wee bit?
He didn't hit the heights. He just looked like a young guy who came, got to a certain level, but you then started to think in your head, you know, he's settling in, you know, he's maybe got to develop. I'm starting to think perhaps that he's kind of neutralised a wee bit by playing on the right, because he's not the sort of winger that's going to go to the touchline and get balls in. He's not like that. As Alan says, he faces defenders up and he wants to come in and shoot onto his right foot. So
he's not going to be completely ineffective on the right, though.
No, but he's looked so much more effective on the left that you're now starting to think, wait a minute, if you're that good, it's not right to accommodate you elsewhere for other players. Other players should be accommodated for you, and that's the difference. That's the difference with
that's your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I always think that, though. I think, and it is about the hierarchy of talent in a squad. You don't go and ask your most talented striker to do your job so that you can play. You play your best players in their best positions, and then you work around them.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of guys in our team that you would do that with, but he's the one that probably can do the other job. I don't think, I've seen a couple of people suggest to accommodate the Kyogo and Giakoumakis situation that Kyogo could play wide. I really would never stick Kyogo out wide ever again. There's just, it doesn't have this. I was actually, the more you think about that decision a year ago, you think it was madness, because when you watch Kyogo play, you could never imagine him playing wide.
But that was just to accommodate Eduardo, really, wasn't
but,
it?
But at the time we gave that a lot of credence, because we thought, well, maybe he can play wide. Turns out he really can't. Like, no, he can. So many other players there.
And Edward can and has. I've still not
got over that now.
No, well, I have absolutely got over it. But it was a strange decision. Yeah. Even at the time, and more so in hindsight.
Yeah.
I don't know if this Ange guy knows what he's doing, to be honest. I think just the last thing on Jota, I think it would be there's two things that would make it slightly different on the right-hand side for him. One, if Maeda hit his top form, because then you would look at it and say, now I understand it, which I think will come, because he had a really good pre-season and he looked sharp. But the other is, I think if you're playing him on the right-hand side and he's looking to deliver the passes a little bit earlier, the crosses earlier, you would probably need a striker that's going to, like, a more Giakoumakis type striker. So I know you're maybe getting into a little bit too much detail, but if Jota's out on the right-hand side and he shifts the ball on his right and can cross quickly, I think, unless it's fired in at the front post, I think Giakoumakis would more naturally be the type of striker that would enjoy the kind of service that you'll get from there.
That's a very good point. Giakoumakis would come on and Celtic would go 4-4-2 for a brief period. It wasn't as effective as we were before. Did you find it odd that we kind of brought Giakoumakis and Kepko Yo on at this money?
No, we're looking for a goal. So I don't think it was odd. And I mean, I think we know enough. We've seen enough of the manager to know that he has a style and a system that he likes to play, but he's not completely wedded to that, that he's not going to try anything else. So, no, I wasn't particularly shocked at all. And, you know, we don't need to get into the Giakoumakis-Kyogo debate, but Giakoumakis has shown that he's more than capable of scoring for us. So, yeah. Yeah. It didn't surprise me, really, no.
In regards to the second goal, it was a debut for Maurice Jens. Taz's debut scores, I thought, a towering header. I loved that. I've watched that back so many times. Just a really powerful header. Good ball in as well, Alan.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good goal, and I think overall it was a good debut. But he did lose a goal as well after giving the goal away.
I've still not seen the goal, so
not seen the.
I'm joking. It was just I was like, you know, because it wasn't shown in the feed because it cut away for quite a while.
I do remember that, and I remember the fury in the pub. But yeah, he owed us a goal. That's how it works. You give one away, you've got to come and score. So if Joe Hart gives one away, say better get up the fucking park and score a goal.
I want to come back to the goal we conceded, but you were impressed with his performance?
Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought he looked really comfortable. For his first start as well, it can't be the most... It's probably not the debut that you would... Ange would want for him. You would probably have been hoping to get him a game at Celtic Park... more comfortable.
Bed him in easier.
Yeah, but he's, do you know what, it probably doesn't make too much of a difference, but that is how you want to feed a player in, especially because he didn't throw him in straight away. He stuck with Welsh. Obviously, Welsh couldn't play in, on Saturday, so it was a bit different. But yeah, I thought he looked good. He looked comfortable. He does got out-jumped, which isn't great, and it's the first contact in the ball as well, so it is just a straight...
header.
Straight battle. It's a really cheap goal to lose, but... You know, these things happen, and, you know, that Iacovite is about 9 feet tall, and, you know, that is an issue.
Yeah, he's huge. Sarmani, impressed with... I don't know why I did that. You impressed with Jens?
It was fine. You can't really make a judgment on him on the strength of one game, obviously, but, yeah, I mean...
My point is, do you think...
He's not going to be my MVP.
Well, we'll come to Sarmani's MVP, of course.
Debutant who scores a goal up at Ross County with a towering header, what can possibly go wrong for a centre half?
I thought it was not St Mirren.
I was making a joke about Shane Duffy.
Yeah.
Did he make his debut against St Mirren?
I thought it was St Mirren. I definitely scored against St Mirren. Maybe you're right.
No, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was Ross County.
I thought it was Ross County as well. Did he not score two goals in two games or something, though?
Aye. That must have been
St Mirren. Might have been St Mirren and Ross County.
In regards to... Well, the kind of point I was going to make regarding Jens is just... if Stephen Welsh is fit at the weekend and Starfield's still unavailable... it is a plastic pitch, but as Kieran Devlin mentioned on the agenda, Starfield grew up playing on plastic pitches, although that's not necessarily if it's a, you know...
He was moulded by them. Is that a wee Batman joke now? Fuck's sake, he's always going out with films. He doesn't like the obvious films.
A bit mainstream.
Fuck me.
But my point
is... I know it was you, Gal. Nah, too mainstream, aye.
I'm just getting a character assassinated by YouTube. But
I'll have what she's having. I mean, that's not even a joke.
Keep
just,
going.
Just a movie line.
Yep. It's When Harry Met Sally, of course. Did you know that?
Yep. No, I don't think I did actually. I don't think I've seen that.
So did you just get like pick a quote that you'd heard was from a film, but you weren't sure what it was?
I was under pressure and I just blurted out the first thing.
Here's a fun fact about that line. The line was delivered by Rob Reiner's mother. Rob Reiner being the director.
Right, back in tracks.
You
stepped out your comfort zone, Alan, and look.
Like he's pointed at me quite aggressively.
Like that Saturday night dating TV programme, that's the listeners right now, just all the fucking red lights going on.
Yes, well, I'm trying to bring us back. The point about Jens I'm trying to say is, like, if Starfelt wasn't available on Sunday, would it be a case of you go back to Welsh or do you keep Jens? Because there's an idea to be said that the person who performed last and performed well keeps the jersey. Is this like the worst time for Stephen Welsh to... I know it was an illness. Is this kind of the worst time for it to happen to him? Alan, start you.
I don't think it's what he would have wanted because he was ahead of Jens in the pecking order. I think the intention would be for Jens to come in. He didn't play... as much last season. He had a tough year last year, Jens. So I think that explains why he didn't come straight in. And I think with Starfelt being out, I think Starfelt probably still miss out at the weekend. I think that it would have been Welsh's to lose. And I think now, I think it's probably the exact opposite. I think it's Jens's to lose. So he didn't make any big mistakes. He looked pretty comfortable. I think you would be inclined to stick with him at the weekend. And it is unfortunate because I think Stephen Welsh was definitely ahead. I don't think Jens would have got his chance probably until much later in the month or potentially the cup
injury
game.
Injury or cup.
But now he has, you know, he got off to a, you know, probably some Annie's assessment was right, a fine start. I don't think Annie likes changing up the centre-halves unless he really has to. And yeah, you do feel a little bit for Welsh, but he might be back in on Sunday. If he's not, I think that is the pecking order then, is that 1-4, probably with Starfelt in it. You know, Carter Vickers, Starfelt, then Jens, then Welsh. That probably would then cement that, unless Jens really does up his game. But I still think, just the amount of time Starfelt's been out, I know he's been back running, he's been back full training for a bit now, but, you know, I would be, I don't know if it's a great game to bring him in. I think you would stick with... I think I would stick with Jens, and if not him, I probably would go to Welsh because they've played more football, they're more up to speed.
Yeah, we're going to come back and look at the Kilmarnock game, but Chris, would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think unless we make another signing, I think Vickers and Starfelt will continue to be his first choice centre-half pairing. However, the fixtures that we've got coming up don't necessitate Starfelt being rushed back. And the nature of the injury and the time he was out means that why would you do that unless you were struggling? It's not this time last season. So yes, and again, between Jens, it probably is as simple as that. He came in, scored, played fine. So Welsh now maybe has to take a back seat, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not sure there's that much between them at this point, as I think it's been mentioned a couple of times, but I do think that Jens is now in the driving seat, which is really unfortunate for Stephen Welsh because he did have that jersey. But we'll see. We'll look at that when it comes to discussing the Kilmarnock game. Alan, any tactical thoughts?
I don't think there was anything too different. I think when County hit the ball, we'd look like we played a little bit deeper than we had against Aberdeen. I would like to see us play a lot higher defensively. I think especially with Jens, because he does have recovery pace, I would be inclined to then even be more aggressive, because Carter Vickers got the strength and he is quick over short distances, and I think Jens can then cover over longer distances. So I would like to see us be really, really ultra aggressive and play really high up the park when we do lose the ball and then stick with it, because, and it is it's a bit of a cliche, but if one guy drops in that line a yard, someone else sees it, he drops, and then that's you. Your line just keeps coming further and further back. You need to be aggressive. You really need to stay high, because otherwise you're creating so much work for your midfielders, because they're being asked to then go and back up Kyogo, Jota, and that's what we love to see. We love to see his press teams high up the park. But see, unless that defensive line stays really, really high, it's the midfielders that will look exposed, because then that gap just becomes too big. So I would like to see that, the team really, really playing high up the park, and I would like to see that at the weekend against Kilmarnock and really stick with it, because if that is the plan in the Champions League and you're going to do that...
Do it now.
Everybody needs to do it, because if one guy gets nervous and that line drops a yard, you'd be as well fucking marching the whole team back 50.
Yeah, great point. Sormani, can we get your MVP? Chris Sormani's MVP.
Jota. It's a simple one. I mean,
again, we talked about last week about how he's a match winner.
Yeah. Three assists, and his all-round play was just excellent, and his little wiggle in front of the support was the icing on the cake.
That was fun.
I did see that little wiggle, enjoyed it.
Yeah. Brief thoughts on the referee, Chris?
Scottish refereeing standard.
Alan?
Yeah. VAR is not going to change that. I think we've covered that previously as well, but not a shocker by Scottish referee standards.
Great stuff. We're going to go to a stats corner with Christian Wolfe. Hello and welcome to Stats and Tactics Corner.
Thank you.
I am your host, Christopher Gallagher, and I'm joined as always by Christian Wolfe. Hello, Christian. How are you, my friend?
Hello, Chris. I'm great because I get to talk about stats and tactics. So it only took a week to imprint that on you, which I'm pleased about.
Hey, listen, the more stats and tactics we can get, the better. How are you feeling after Celtic's victory. In fact, you know, before we even get to that, we did a review podcast. We do a review podcast every Tuesday. It's yourself, it's Graham. A little bit about that. What did you talk about this week?
We'd planned to talk a lot about, you know, world events and football and deep dive down to a couple of things. But I think a large part of it was actually focused on the Ross County game. Yeah, some tactical deep dive, but what Graham is quite good of getting me to go down paths and probe me to say things that I fully stand behind. But yeah, it was good. So we kind of start one place and then we wander off. But yeah, it's really good, I think, tactical look at Ross County, but also going into some players' roles, what they do, what I think they don't do, and so on. We had a chat about John Kennedy, had a chat about, you know, this European court case that might have some implications for if some Scottish club maybe wanted to join the English league and things like that. So, yeah, it was good. An hour and a half. So we went over a little bit, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, so every Tuesday the review podcast drops. It's a fantastic listen. It's just very different to everything we're doing. You're obviously listening to the Cynic Weekly at the moment. We have the agenda, which drops on a Monday. We've got the Lunch Club on a Friday, and we've got all the reactions and features. But we just want to do Stats and Tactics Corner is just our way of kind of letting you know what we're doing in those spaces at thecynic.co. So Celtic defeated Ross County 3-1. Give me your kind of general overview, stats and tactics, thoughts.
Well, start with the numbers. You know, Instat has the expected goals at 2.8 to Celtic, 0.4 to Ross County. So there's a 2.4 expected goals difference. And in a 2-goal game, I think that's a good reflection. You know, what Celtic, their output, what they managed to achieve in terms of goals scored and conceded was a good reflection of the actual quality of chances in the game. I think the interesting thing for me going through the game again, talking about it, is probably more how that happened in the flow of the game. When and how the changes came and how maybe the goals maybe kind of matched the ebb and flow of the game. Yeah. I think Celtic scored when maybe they were struggling a bit more, at least a couple of the goals, but they didn't get kind of... They maybe should have scored more earlier before it went to 1-1. But we can talk a little about why I think that happened.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously there was a bit of a TV lockout in regard to that, which is obviously disappointing. But did we perform the way we should have from a stat points of view?
Yeah, as we did last week, it's kind of good of taking a little look about what Celtic did last year in the league. And what they did in the same game last year, just to kind of get a feeling for it stats-wise. So, for example, away in the league last season, on average, Celtic had an XG difference of 1.5. So they created 1.5 more expected goals than the opponents. Ross County game away in April, they created 2.3 more. Oof. And this game, 2.4. So this is, in a stat context, an above-average league performance compared to last season and so on. I think the interesting things, if you look at things like passing and possession, was that Celtic had pretty much the same amount of passes they have in all away games and against Ross County in April. They had more possession. And what basically leads to that is that they held the ball for longer for each possession. So on average last season, away in the league, every possession Celtic had, 19 seconds. Away to County in April, 16 seconds. But on Sunday, 22 seconds per possession. So they kind of held on to the ball 6 seconds longer per possession, which is quite a long time when you have almost 100 possessions a game. And so that was an interesting kind of twerk. And we'll come back to why that happened. But again, kind of stuff like the territory stuff, stats, as I call them, you know, how many times Celtic got into the final third in control of the ball, how many times got into the penalty box in control of the ball. Again, above average, you know, against Ross County away last time and above average in the league last year, which we've seen so far. They got into the penalty box 25 times in control of the ball, and the average last season away was only 22. So yeah, overall, like stats-wise, if you just pure look at the numbers, you know, comprehensive and like a well-deserved victory, if you want to call it that.
Okay, I really find that interesting about holding on to the ball, because that was something we always kind of levied at Neil Lennon as being rather kind of counterproductive to how Celtic should be playing. Why are we holding on to the ball longer, just in this specific case?
And this, I think it comes back to how the game was set up, and it's specifically how Ross County set up, All right. So we take a step back against Aberdeen. Aberdeen played a quite almost Richard Sonal block, as we call it. So they're more thinking about the players stating their kind of spaces rather than doing some man marking. Whereas against Ross County, that was completely flipped. You know, Ross County went out, asked it in April and put a very heavy man marking focus to a degree that Callaghan, who played central midfield against Hearts for County, they put him on the right wing against Greg Taylor in the first half. And essentially, especially the start of the game, Ross County very, very man marked. The only two players on the Celtic team that didn't really have a Ross County player assigned to them were the two centre backs. So the Ross County striker kind of pressed one of them, but essentially Ross County left one of the Celtic centre backs. On the review, I compared to one of those moving walkways in an airport. You know, you can just stand on them and you transport it quite a distance, which was kind of what Ross County did. They just let the Celtic centre backs move up. Here you go, almost 20 yards from outside the box. And I think that's where the possession numbers come from. But essentially, Celtic centre back had the ball, and he's like, you know, nobody's attacking me here, but everybody's marked, so I'm just going to go a bit further. So a lot of the attacks, especially in the first half, was just the centre back going, okay, it's nobody going to pressure me, I'm just going to go up. So I think that's a lot where it came from on Sunday.
Is that a smart way to set up against us? Obviously, they lost 3-1, and they were comprehensively beaten, but if you're a
I'm glad you ask.
Better team, yeah.
So Celtic is going to come up against different ways of teams defending against them in the league, especially. And you're going to get a lot of these low blocks. And already in two games, we've seen two completely different approaches. So what Ross County wants to do here, they take a gamble and they say, look, we're going to stay really closely man-marked. And we're going to let the centre-back have the ball, because in theory, they can do the least damage. Which I think is largely true.
Yeah.
And it's not about how good a ball player Jens or CCV is. It's about letting the player who's least likely to thread a needle pass or to find a difficult pass. Because in comparison to, look, Stephen Wells took it against Aberdeen, but against Aberdeen, the way they set up, he's had so many passing options because Celtic can kind of put more players in one place than Aberdeen, and he could find Greg Taylor, Hatate and stuff all the time. Whereas CCV and Jens, when they had the ball in Ross County's half, it's difficult because everybody's man-marked. And then once they find an outlet for that pass, this is very little time. So I think Ross County, the first 20, 25 minutes, that was quite effective. And the Celtic only have 5 shots in that time. Most of them is from outside the box as well. But here's the thing, Christopher. I don't know if you know this. Celtic don't stop. Right? They don't stop. And this is, I think, essentially what happens, because you come up against these things and what you need to do is just keep doing it. You try to find space, try to create movement, try to lose your marker again and again and again. I think from about 25 minutes out of the first half, I think Celtic kind of, they managed to do this. And what also happened is this is a really difficult thing for Ross County to keep up. Like, because one little mistake in when you press and so on, on the review, we went through a couple of those examples of kind of mad pressing decisions from Ross County, and immediately Celtic exploits that. So I think Celtic were patient. They kept trying. It's not easy, but see, in the last, I think, 20 minutes of the first half, 9 shots, 7 of them inside Ross County's penalty box. So I think they were doing the right thing. You know, Ross County took a gamble. This is what they do. It works for a little while, but it's really hard to keep up the whole game. And that's what we saw.
You have to have that quality, though, don't you? And obviously,
well, yeah, exactly. And that quality is going to show eventually. Like, so if it doesn't happen in the first 25, keep going. And the interesting thing is, obviously, Celtic don't score in the first half, but in the second half, two things happen. Ross County, for some reason, takes Callaghan away from Greg Taylor and puts him in an attacking midfield position. And they put on two new wingers, and they put a young winger called Edwards up against Taylor. And if you look at the first goal, what happens is that Edwards kind of tackles, he runs into Taylor. Taylor falls down. The ball goes out wide towards the Ross County right back. And Edwards, he gambles that this is going to be a counterattack, and he's 10 yards off the pitch. But Jota wins the ball in front of Randall. Randall goes in heavy on Greg Taylor. And Greg Taylor pretty much ends up on top of Randall, which takes him out of the game. And Edwards is also out in the game. And see, that's enough. Yeah. Edwards gambling, Randall going heavy, Taylor lying top of him. Jota and McGregor now are two against one on the side. And then the quality shows through. Kyogo's non-movement for that goal is amazing. But that's all it takes. You know, a little indiscipline from Ross County, Celtic is right there to exploit it, and they did.
So you think, see, like this season, you've obviously mentioned it, the fact that, you know, Aberdeen played with a low block and so did Ross County, but very different types. Is that just going to be a variation of Celtic, the opposition trying to stop this Celtic team?
I think it'll be up to the individual managers as well. Like, Mackay tried this in April, and a lot of what we saw in April, we saw in this game as well, like doing that man marking. I bet you anything on Sunday. I mean, as I said in a review, Mackay's marking was McGuinness-like almost. I think we're going to say the same at Rugby Park. We're going to usually see a heavy man marking focus, whereas Aberdeen tried to, maybe they just weren't set properly, but I think the way Aberdeen did it suited Celtic perfectly. But if they come up against this, don't stop, Christopher. You do have to keep doing it. I think even though players like Maeda was kind of, we'll get back to him, he's a bit criticized, but I think he suits this because he gets into those positions. It keeps working, he gets into the central position. So Celtic will need to find ways of like dealing with those different kind of low blocks they had. I think on Sunday, we're probably going to see more what we saw against Ross County at Kilmarnock.
Individuals in general, who kind of stood out from that point of view? I'm just, David Turnbull, did he, stat-wise, did he do okay?
No, he didn't really show up in any significant way. I'm watching the game back. I thought Turnbull was, I think it's a little bit sloppy sometimes. I still thought it was a little bit sloppy if you go back and watch the game. Callum McGregor,
oof,
had a few passes as well. But I think it is difficult, when, especially in the first time, when you have that man marking, that your passing needs to be really spot on and need to be crisp and needs to be fast. And I think that's, could we talk about, it's difficult to break down, but also, you know, it was quite clear that Ross County wanted the Celtic centre-backs to have the ball and to bring it out. And so that kind of speed of that kind of first few passes in the build-up was key, but Ross County made it difficult for the centre-backs to do those quick passes because they had everybody marked. So, but I'll actually take you back to the end of the game, because the other interesting tactical tweak, I think, was, and this kind of comes back to the players, but a Celtic goes to a 4-4-2 at the end, you know, when it turns to 1-1. And I think up until Ross County score, Celtic's got a good game. I think they're just unlucky to get a set piece against. We can talk about, okay, need to be set off for set pieces, but in terms of the amount of play and so on, you know, that's just happens. And then after that, it kind of returns back to that, okay, let the centre back have it. And I don't think Celtic creates loads. And even when Gigi comes on, I think Celtic lose a little bit of control of possession in the ball because they essentially have one player less in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
So on the review, we kind of went through some examples of that and why. Kyogo drops a bit deeper, that helps, but I think it was quite, see, once Celtic obviously go up to 2-1, Kyogo comes straight off, because you do kind of, you lose a bit of control when you put two on top because you lose a man in the middle. So I wasn't, as I said on the review, I think I'd rather have an attacking midfielder in there than two strikers, because I think it'll work. You keep going, you don't stop Christopher, it will work. And then obviously Celtic scored set piece, so it's kind of the reverse of getting one, conceding one, a set piece as well, but they didn't need a set piece to score. And would that goal have come the way Celtic was playing if they didn't get a set piece? I'm not so sure. So I had some misgivings about the 4-4-2, as you'd expect from a hipster like me.
Yeah, of course. In regards to the new kind of talking point, we always need a talking point that the whole support can get behind.
The narrative.
Maeda and Jota and, you know, playing one on the left, one on the right, and who's more effective and such. What's your kind of thoughts on how Maeda performed? They obviously came off at half-time, but, you know, is this probably going to rumble on for the whole season?
Yeah, I guess everybody needs something to talk about. Maeda, and us, to be fair. Maeda, I thought it's a shame he came off, because, as I said, he, in the end of the half, he gets into three really good positions, and has three shots. And they're all kind of, I think it's all difficult kind of positions. But what Maeda does well, like, you remember, he's a winger, but his shot map is like a striker.
Yeah.
He gets into those positions in the middle and he gets the shot, and he's like, okay, what's his finishing like? His finishing is his goals and his XG lines up. So he scores the amount of goals, the chances he gets to would indicate over a longer set of games. So, but the discussion is always like, oh, is Jota more effective on the left or the right? And it's like, but they're not stationary on the left or right. You know, we're talking about a game where Jota did, you know, set up three goals from the left, and but he also set up chances from the right. So, well, I'm not a big fan of the Nilan switcheroo generally. I think it kind of works well. Celtic's won the last two games. I think Mieda has, well, he's not scored, he's been effective in that system. And I think putting Jota on the left permanently, I don't see the point of that when the kind of the system is working. I think Jota probably prefers that. But I also don't think there's a big issue in having them switch during the game.
Really. Also, there's going to be injuries, there's going to be suspensions, there's going to be rest time. So it's, for me, I think it's fine. Anyway, before we kind of, we need to, like always, Christian, we always run out of time. But
yes,
what's our, before we, because we want to have a quick chat about this player we've been linked with, what can we take away from this game? Big headlines.
The headline is, we saw a completely different setup defensively from the opponent. And I think a lot of it was to almost an extreme way of letting Celtic centre-backs have the ball. I'll be interested to see if that follows up. But I also need to take away that Celtic, they keep playing, they keep probing, and that's what they should do in those cases where they don't get an early goal. Just keep doing what they're doing. End of the first half, very good. The start of the second half, again, very good. And when opponents make a little mistake, bang, they're there. And then the switch to 4-4-2. Take that away because I'm not a fan. That can be a takeaway. Take it away. And so I think that's the headlines. I think that's what the interesting one. So that kind of how Celtic come up against different defensive blocks will be an interesting, I think this is for me at least.
Great stuff. We just want to quick briefly chat about Alex Collado, who has been linked with Celtic. He's a Barcelona player. He was on loan at Granada last season. What's your thoughts? Should we be going for this player?
I mostly just looked at his stats. So if we get linked, we got a stat report. Obviously, we put on at 90 Minutes Cynic. And what it does is to kind of try to give you a snapshot over his stats and where they rank against other players in position across, pretty much across the world. Not just to say, okay, this is how good it is, but what type of player is. What does the stat say about his style? What you do most of, what it doesn't do. And, you know, there's some heat maps and stuff you can have a look at where he does things on the pitch. So that gives you an overview. I think it kind of reminds me of Jota, who went obviously out on loan to Spain to a club that got relegated. And that influences your stats. And I think Joe Alden had 7 or 8 full 90s. Collado had about 12 full 90s for a team that got relegated in La Liga as well. So that influences the stats. But I think he's an interesting player in terms of, I had a quick look at some of his footage as well. And he in terms of a Celtic squad, where I see him would definitely be like one of the number eights and one of the more attacking number eights. So for me, if you look at this, just had a really quick look at him. He looks more like a Rodri replacement for me in this squad.
Oh.
That if something O'Reilly's out, he can kind of compete with O'Reilly about that kind of more attacking role, for example. And I think having a quick look at him, he does good defensive work as well. So I think initially, I think it's an interesting link. I mean, okay, it's another loan. But you know, instinctively looking at him, I think, you know, he there would be a specific place for him in the squad that Celtic need to fill. Because I think we are one short in the number eights, depending on Ediguchi and Moy as well. So, yeah, I mean, a loan with an option to buy for a player who's, you know, he's coming on to 23 now, 24. No, 23 even. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it's going to be, if they're going to be a new Celtic player, then it's going to be a loan player. I mean, there's reports yesterday that, you know, maybe this isn't happening, but I think it's definitely something that Celtic should be interested in, because I think he'd be a good fit and he's a good player.
It's the profile we should be looking at, I think. And let's hope we can get some business done. Christian Wolf, as always, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Stats and tactics, Connor. Pleasure as always.
Thanks to Christian for the stats report. That'll be a function of the podcast every single week, so have a listen out for that. You can listen to a lot more from Christian and from lots of all the other contributors on thecynic.co, where we've got podcasts every single day, including news, reactions, and features. Thecynic.co, check it out. I just want to talk about, we've got some news. We're not going to probably not touch on it as, because maybe... let me just explain what the news is, as opposed to just kind of going around in circles. There's a court case involving a team from what's the name of the team again?
He's rattled.
I'm rattled. FC Swift have filed a lawsuit against UEFA and the Luxembourg Football Federation after being prevented from joining a cross-border league. They've said that the rules prohibiting clubs from creating and running transnational competitions is hampering them, and essentially they're not being able to be the club they can be. Jean-Louis Dupont, who was part of the famous Jean-Marc Bosman ruling in 95, talked about Celtic and Rangers, and he talked about essentially how Celtic and Rangers could essentially use this if the court case goes in favour of FC Swift. It could be used as a mechanism for Celtic and Rangers to potentially move to England. Clubs will not move, in inverted commas, but clubs from small countries would be entitled to produce their domestic football in a larger territory in order to match the production power of the big leagues. Dupont is convinced that clubs in Scotland, Holland and Scandinavia need cross-border leagues in order to be more competitive. We have heard this since we've been knee-high to a grasshopper, Alan. We've had Fergus. I think there was rumours we were going to move to Ireland at one point. We're going to take we were going to buy Wimbledon and take Wimbledon's place in the English League. That was back in the mid-90s. And then, obviously, the Atlantic League and all this stuff. Alan, are you just tired of it? Or if there is a mechanism for Celtic to go to other pastures, would you back it? What's your thoughts?
I don't think the simplicity of moving to the English tiered football system would be one that I would be particularly interested in. There's upsides, it would be great, having, real competition. I mean, you think how excited we get for pretty much every Celtic game here.
Yep.
Whether it be home or away in the Premier Sports Cup, or whether it's, the league, we love it. And we'd go and watch a team anywhere. You change that up and your kind of mid-table sides are then teams like West Ham, who are a really good side, but Tottenham's team like that. I mean, the standard is much higher, but I'm just not particularly interested in being marketed as Celtic and Rangers. And that's how a lot of it would be.
Yep. Do you think the people in charge of our football club want that?
I think if there was money in it, they absolutely would die. I think they would like the riches of it, but I don't think I don't think they've got the... and again, I reiterate, it's not something I'm particularly in favour of, especially if it is that just transplanting us and moving us down. If it was wider European restructuring, okay, consider it, that's fine, but I wouldn't want that. I don't think our board have got the ambition to pull it off either. For a board that... for all the pluses and negatives, the one thing sometimes they're not really good at is actually making money, because they leave so much money on the table. And I mean, currently, I think a plan like this is probably too big, too ambitious for us to pull off at this point in time. And I just don't see it. There's a lot of obstacles, and I don't see them having the ability to quickly be able to navigate and go through them, which I'm fine with, because I'm quite happy with Celtic as they are just now. And there's so many other areas we could improve on. But I don't think they've got the ambition or the nous to pull it off currently. So I think it is another one of these stories that will get millions of clicks, but I don't think we're any further down the road for it, and I'm not particularly fussed.
Chris or Manny?
I really, really wouldn't want Celtic to move to the English Premier League. I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I don't think there's anything wrong with the way, Celtic playing in the Scottish League. What I would want would be financial parity, but some levelling up or levelling down when it comes to, when Scottish football, even in the 80s, when we were competing, Dundee United, Aberdeen were in European finals, obviously Aberdeen won and Dundee United got even the semis of the European Cup. That was possible then. You had teams like Steaua Bucharest as well. You know, I don't want to get become this kind of teary-eyed, you know, the Hovis theme tune playing in the background about the way football was. But I think that that balance would be restored with more financial parity. Now, not daft enough to think that that's going to happen, but that doesn't mean to say that because that's not going to happen, you throw your lot in into the English Premier League because it's...
Mm-hmm. We'd be selling our soul.
Yes, and it just, it doesn't feel right. And as much as you would get excited to a certain extent, that would eventually drift, you know. I mean, you would, okay, you would have more bigger games each season, but, you know, and then you're exactly right. We would have to go down as a pairing and it would be the Old Firm, none that nonsense getting sent down. And it's not something I'd like to do. You know, touching on the Luxembourg team that are kind of taking this forward. I mean, see, if there was wider, as Alan said, wider restructuring in European football and there was maybe more, you know, something more divisional or like, you know, I'm not even
regional really, or something like that.
Yeah,
like, yeah. You know, regional leagues and stuff.
I'm not going to talk about the Atlantic League that was proposed or something, but at least something like that would be a bit more interesting than just saying, here's a product, we're going to tag you onto it so that we can... Make even money. More money, basically. So,
Alan,
I think, I mean, we are probably kind of verging away from this particular story, but I don't think there's much more to add to that other than the name Celtic and Rangers gets mentioned with regards to Premier League, and it's, you know, a big clickbait article.
Yeah,
I do think though that, and I think maybe we talked about it when the Super League or the European Super League was mentioned or whatever it was called, and the, you know, the kind of 12 clubs that were involved in that showed the hand and then quickly scuttled back. To be honest, I would be all for, see, like the kind of the 8 to 12 elite teams in Europe, I would quite happily let them go and do their own thing. Well, not on a level playing field with them anyway. You then let them go and do their own thing, play each other 8 times a year and let them do it. And then the rest can then look and actually work with, right, how do we build European competition outside of the big 5 leagues? Again, I really would be interested in something like that. And I think that would then involve the wider clubs in Scotland because the interest then, I know that the UEFA Conference League is maybe something that people don't like, but I think what you're seeing is there's an appetite for different types of competition. People don't, I mean, largely the Champions League for me used to be something I would watch religiously. Now, unless it's a particularly interesting midweek game, you know that the top four, the pot one seeds are likely going to go through, so you're not interested in the group stage matches. Then it only gets interesting after that for a bit. So I think there is an appetite for, I think, clubs to be involved in European football that isn't just them getting a big payday from UEFA and then taking that pot of money back to their own team, their own club, their own country. If you could look at that and then start thinking about how you properly fund the game and develop it whilst having competition across maybe this underclass of European leagues, I would love it. I really would. And take a 2-year break from, you know, playing in the Scottish Premiership and you do something like that, you know, a 16-team league full of, you know, all the also-rans from Europe. I'd also love to see that.
Also-rans, but like huge clubs.
Yeah,
and that's
but
the kind
not
of, yeah,
that
yeah, no,
elite,
I get, yeah,
8 to 12.
Yeah.
The idea of that European Super League, I'd have been quite happy for them all to, you know, go and do their own thing. But obviously they need all the other teams because actually more people support all the other teams and this is the thing. So that's where I would be interested in a conversation, not just Celtic and Rangers being transplanted into the Premier League like
and
Cardiff,
then never playing in European football again.
But the problem is, and we shouldn't really be giving this as much airtime, but the problem is as well is see if a team surprised us all. Let's take Ajax, right? They got to the semis in the Champions League, right? Say they won it. That would be viewed by UEFA and the Champions League as...
Anyone can do it?
No, it wouldn't be. It would be viewed as poor because...
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
They outside one of the big, you know, probably the 12 European Super League teams winning it, it's not something that they want. They don't want to do that. It's because it's bad for the brand because they've sold these teams as so
yeah,
big.
Yeah,
it's
right.
You know,
I mean, remember when Ajax were in the semi-finals and Tottenham put them out and got to the European Cup final and Tottenham were seen as like the underdogs when in reality Tottenham had spent something like 50 times as much.
Yeah.
And that's, again, back to your point about the narratives that are spun by UEFA, trying to make out like Tottenham, who have a turnover of like, I don't know how much ever because of their, it's all bullshit.
See everything that I've just said as well. See if we finish second in our Champions League group stage league this year, I will
close it up.
Last 16 club here. We are the big boys. We're all fucking off to, I don't know, Qatar or wherever we'll play our games.
Do not listen to a word this man says. He's got principles, but he's got others if you want them. Don't you worry about that.
We'll probably come back to that at some point. But
5 years' time. We'll come back to it in 5 years' time.
Let's touch on the, just again, Josip Juranovic has been linked away to Chelsea, Manchester United. That's the two clubs. I think there's Croatian journalists, the guy who kind of broke the story that he was joining Celtic, has basically come out and rubbished it. They've said, what a report said that Celtic are open to offers, which I find absolutely crazy, but then again, it's Celtic. 50 million quid is the supposed starting off point. I mean, just at this point, in regards to the season starting, how far we are from the window, having a player that's attracting interest from one of the elite clubs is a good thing because it means they're playing well. But it's really not something we want at this point because he's a guy who I think we all would say is one of our key players for money.
Yeah, it's not good for... You know, when you get players being linked away, it's kind of unsettling. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's hugely unsettling for him or for the entire squad or the players, but it niggles until the window's closed. It's a bit of a niggle.
It's a worry, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, Ralston, I wouldn't have a huge amount of issue with Ralston being our right back domestically in most games.
Yeah, not even every game.
No, not every game. And, you know, there's some people... I mean, there are some games where Ralston is a good option, you know, coming in. And this isn't an opportunity to stick the boot into Ralston. But you need to go out and buy another right-back.
Yeah.
And we'd need to be identifying another right-back just now. And we would hope that he would be close to the level that Juranovic is. Now, Juranovic isn't a perfect right-back, you know, but He's a key player for us. He's a really good football player playing for a really good international side as well. And it's good that he's attracting that interest. But see, you know, get away from the money part of it, you know. If we are in any way thinking about selling him, because, you know, I understand you don't want to keep players that are unhappy, we really better be doing our homework, you know, in terms of getting another right back in. Because I don't think we would... I can't imagine Ralston in the Champions League, you know, even if that's just between now and January. So, yeah, if we're going to think about selling Josip Juranovic, I really hope we've done our homework in terms of sourcing that replacement.
Alan, he's a guy who, you know, he's performed really well in close season with, you know, his international team, and, you know, he's starting to develop a profile. He's a guy that I think is one of my favourite players to watch. When it comes to how big a blow would it be?
Well, it would be, because he's not the perfect right back, but he's a perfect right back for us. And I think that is the fee you brought him in at, the age he's at. He's a player that's pretty close to his peak. And I think we will see the best of him this year. And I think he will be here. I think he'll be here until at least after the World Cup. I do think, though, that the point you make is quite important, that irrespective of whether we are listening to bids now or not, we really should be looking at a right back, because I think the age he's at, the form he's showing, and the ambition of the player, he will, after playing in the Champions League this year and after probably playing at the World Cup this year, he's highly likely to move on. So I don't think it will be this window. I think he'll be quite content. But I do think that a player like him will see 2 years in Scotland as a comfortable amount of time spent here. And that's not... He loves it here. I think we all remember when, you know, after Dundee United last year, he was quite clearly loving it. You know, he's won a major title, major honours, but things happen quick, and he's not 20, he's not 20,
that's
21.
That's my worry, things happen quick.
Yeah, and I think that's... I'm fine with that. You know, I don't think that's... But losing him now would be a blow, unless they've got someone, you know, that's... already available and ready. But I think Juranovic, it's pretty rare to get ones like that where he's at that age and he's as experienced as he is. He was a really good fit. So whether it's now or in January. I do think it's likely he might see out the season, but I just think the talent of the player, it's a real honour to be linked with those clubs. When you, I think I'd said it as well when we were talking about it way back when it was Atletico Madrid. Largely when players are linked to me from our clubs, it's to a stepping stone club, you know, the Wanyama, Foster, kind of Van Dijk type scenario. He's a player that's been linked with
the top,
the elite level clubs that we were just talking about. When they, if they do truly come knocking, as in if those teams do approach Celtic or approach his agent, it's a different story. And there is very little that the club can do. All the club can do is try and maximise what they're getting. I don't think that 15 million figure, and I don't think he'll go this window. I'm really confident that he'll be here. I don't think that 15 million figure is anywhere near enough to tempt you this close to the start of the Champions League. I don't think you would be very, very lucky if we could replace him. It would take half that money right away to even get a player near that standard. So I'm confident whether he stays out the full season, I don't know. But I think the World Cup will help, and I think he'll want to play Champions League football. Once those two things are ticked off, though, I think it is inevitable that he will be looking elsewhere. And that's fine, because he's done well for us. We'll make good money on him. You want to see the best players here, but we need to understand the kind of the conditions of, you know, a player like that moving to Scotland. He'll see it as a success. He'll then be thinking elsewhere, and that's fine. We need to be ahead of that, though.
I seen an interview with this guy called Paul Heyman, who's like a talent relations guy. He was talking about...
What?
He's a...
What's a talent relations guy?
So basically, when it comes to American sports, he develops he develops athletes for... he's like an agent. So he's an agent, but he's like a talent agent. And what he does is he basically says to whoever he speaks to at whatever organization, he's like, okay, you've got this guy in, but you know, you should be thinking about 18 months when he's comfortable now, but you know.
We do this all the time with Celtic.
I know.
It's just not going to happen. So see, fucking 18 months down the line, you're kidding yourself on. See if we can get through the next week. We sell a player, then we buy a player. Ideally, we might have a good idea who that player is, but I do feel like...
Is it one in, one out, essentially, at Celtic?
I mean, it is, aye. Unless the in happens to be an 18-year-old player that we've picked up, and really we look into him being quite good, a la Jeremy Frimpong, it is one in, one out. See, when people watch Amazon Prime documentaries about how other clubs work, don't ever try and fucking apply it to Celtic, because it just doesn't work.
He's really angry for
him. No, it's just... Really, this up. Idea that we're going to get to this utopia under this board is just so.
Alex Collado has been linked. I just put conveyor belt question mark. I'll go fuck myself.
I'll just that, and he just cut him right off. Bringing
the heat here.
No, good.
What was the sorry? A talent relations guy, an agent,
essentially. Yeah,
show me the money.
That's from what film?
Love You Too, Baby.
Jerry Maguire.
There you go. You know the name of the song.
I've never actually seen that, but I do quite fancy watching it. So
you've never seen.
You're quite a lot of films where you don't. You just know the.
It's a famous line from a movie. The guy sits up and shouts, "Show me the money!" Doesn't he?
The guy sits up.
Rosebud.
Citizen Kane. Alex Collado has been linked. I think it's you know, as we're recording this, it's I think kind of. He's been linked with another La Liga team. He wants to stay in Spain. But is it he's the type of profile we should be looking at?
You want to be telling him it's roasting over here.
It is absolutely roasting.
But I don't want to go to that climate, eh? Look outside, Alex, my man. It is violent.
Is he the type of profile you're after?
Yeah.
Somani?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know... Jota is a kind of... I didn't want to make a direct comparison with Jota, but if you've got... very talented youth players at certain clubs. I mean, it's what we've done. It's what we did with Frimpong, you know. If you can identify players who aren't going to make the leap to the first team of the club that they're at, but are of a, you know, that are significantly talented, a lot of those players are that talented, we still can't get them because they can go to other English teams, but there has been a track record of us being able to get some of them. He seems as if he will fit the bill for that. So he is the exact profile, I think, of players that we're able to do. If we're able to uncover gems like that, and they're willing to come to the club for 2-3 years or whatever it is, that's exactly what you want to do. So when you're linked with guys like that, it's pleasing because, well, to go back to the point Alan made about the Celtic board and the way the club's run, it's not great, but there's obviously some sort of scouting that's going on there, and I think identifying players in that bracket is could be a lucrative for us.
It seems that he's moving, probably going to stay in Spain, or Celtic seem to be out of the running in that regard, but as we say, you know, that's kind of the profile we're after. We'll also be linked with, sorry, Al.
Yeah, I just think the thing that jumped out at to me from it, and I think some of the boys mentioned it on the agenda on Monday, that it's good to see that we will go back into the market if it's the right player and if it fits maybe the right area. And I think that's probably, Ange will probably publicly say he's happy with what he's got at the moment, but like every good football manager, he's always thinking, and he does have a ruthless streak, he is always thinking, I want better, and if I can get better in, we'll do it. And hopefully that then lends itself to meaning there could be another couple in. And I think that area, that winger area, going back to the conversation at the start, I think that's one that you would like, it would help the maths of picking the team a little bit, if you like, if we had one more in that area.
I think that market becomes more fruitful and more realistic towards the end of the window as well, because, let's be brutally honest, as much as it maybe pains us to think this way about our football club, we become a more attractive option for some players when some other options disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's why we got Jota, it's why we got Vickers, it's probably why we got Frimpong. And if, you know, we get to the end of the window and there's players in these markets that are still looking for a move, then we could hopefully pick up some players. And the point that Alan and others have made is we look as if we're prepared to go there. I don't think we're going to get to the point where the manager says, nah, that's it, we're not signing anybody else. He might indicate, you know, I'm happy with what I've got. But I think it happened with O'Reilly as well. I think if the opportunity arises there, we'll grab it. And that's good, because you don't want to go into the last day of the window, Chris, and think we're not going to do anything.
It does make for an exciting last day of the window.
Oh, aye.
I also think it's quite, I don't know, it's quite jarring that you call Carter Vickers Vickers. that's twice.
Well,
Vickers,
that's
right, we need a decision here.
See, I'd call him CCV.
Well, CCV's a bit too...
I mean, Vickers is his second name, I guess. Cameron Carter is his first name.
I think the hyphen's after... Is it Carter hyphen Vickers?
No, I think his full surname is Carter Vickers. But, you know...
I mean, listening. He's not going to be... He's not bothered, but...
Could call him CV.
CV? Well, that's just... I could call him Cameron.
By the way, just so you're aware, Paul Heyman is the talent relations for WWE.
So I knew it would be a fucking
honestly,
thing.
We get totally lured in there by this.
I mean, some idiot.
Yeah, my
dressed
God.
In a fucking
leotard. He's a genius, actually.
Right.
He is a genius.
How's he? Right, okay.
He was talking about Brock Lesnar, and Vince McMahon was like, we've got what
who's
we need.
Who's Brock Lesnar? Who's Vince McMahon?
Right, he's a wrestling guy, and he basically says, we've got what we need now, we don't have to think about it. And Paul Heyman was legitimately like, well, is he going to be your main event in 18 months? And he was like, aye, you will be. And he left like 9 months later. And Heyman was trying to say, essentially, you have to build. And that's why Alan's 100% right, our board have no interest in running a football club.
Did you do much in the Sunday summer?
Fuck up.
I spent an hour and a half thinking about what I should call our American centre half.
Before we move on to Kilmarnock, I just want to make one point. We've been linked with Bamba Dieng. Again, it's a very tenuous link. It's probably not even thingy, but it brings up the point about, do you think Celtic still want a striker in? Here's the quotes that Ange had last weekend at the press conference. I think I've said that while the window's open, we're still active. Nothing definite, but while the window's open and we're expecting that if the opportunity arises for the right kind of player, then we can move for it. But also means there could be some people outgoing as well. So we just have to we have to stay alert and be active, which again, as you kind of highlighted, is, you know, it's just what a good football manager says. But do you think they're trying to try and get someone in the front three before the window closes?
I think they will, but I don't think it will be an out and out striker. I think I liked, and I feel like I have went back to it a few times, the link at this kind of quite early now with Ryan May,
yeah,
or me, whatever. I like that because a player that could offer you that flexibility, probably best on the right, but could go through the middle. I feel like an out-and-out striker, I don't think would really... I think if you're looking in that area, it would be a young player who is very young and is quite happy to be training with the first team and has a high upside. I don't think us bringing in an out-and-out striker at the moment, given Kyogo and Gigi are both clearly out-and-out strikers, and I think bringing a third in would be, especially if it's a first-team signing, I don't know if it's one that would really make a lot of sense. I've seen a few people saying, but if we bring one more player in this window, if it was just an out-and-out striker, I'd probably be pretty disappointed.
Sorry.
Much the same. I think we would probably look for flexibility across the front three, as long as that's not to the detriment of his ability. You don't want a guy who's fairly average in all positions, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think if you got somebody who could play to a good standard across that front three, mm-hmm. it would give you far more options in terms of what our starting lineup is, and that might be something that we would look to do.
I also think as well, just it's not a market we've had any success in, really. Probably the most success we've had in that market at that price is Giakoumakis. I mean, a litany of strikers before that, under that 2.5 million range, is just a horror show of names. So, you know, Maeda can play through the middle if you need him. It's not his primary position, but I think he can play the function well. You know, Leila Bada did it against St Johnstone last year. If you were talking about Champions League games and they were both out, then of course it would be a catastrophe. But it's not a primary area you want to address. If it's a domestic league game, I think there's so many players that you could play through there if both of them weren't available. So, you know, it needs to be someone that can play on that right-hand side, or maybe another midfielder, or, you know, something else. Not a striker, not an out-and-out striker.
Kilmarnock on Sunday. It's a 12 o'clock kickoff. It's the first time we've been on that plastic pitch. Obviously, they got relegated and they're just back up now. General thoughts going into this game, Chris, is it similar to last week regarding Ross County, or maybe Kilmarnock aren't on that level?
I don't think they're as good a team as Ross County. I think they'll be even more defensive, if that can be possible. I think that it's not a nice place to go, primarily because of the pitch. And then we're playing a Derek McInnes side. It's going to be an ugly fixture, one way or another.
Yep.
So it's either going to be really stifling for us, and we'll win by the odd goal, or it'll be difficult, or they'll put absolute lumps out of us. So it's not going to be a fixture where it's going to be pretty, shall we say. I'm not too worried about it. I just think that we're better than them, and I think that eventually, what I've seen of them this season, they just look like
a Derek McInnes team,
much poorer version of his Aberdeen side, and we never had particular problem with his Aberdeen side, bar maybe a couple of games. So I'm not particularly worried about it, but I do think it might be one of those ones where the game isn't out of sight, and we need to work for it, and it becomes dogged. It's not going to be pretty, but I think Miller Mertens with the 3 points.
Alan, yourself, how are you feeling about it?
I'm always wary of saying I'm confident, because that's never a good sign. But I think for a lot of the reasons you've just said there, I think there is reason to be optimistic. If he does the tactic of the ludicrous man-for-man that he did for years at Aberdeen, despite it never really working, if he does that at the weekend, I would be very confident. I probably do have a bit of PTSD over the last time we went to Kilmarnock in this kind of weather at this time of the season with high expectations, because it was
Ryan Christie.
Yep, and Chris Julien giving away a penalty. So if we could avoid any kind of dramas like that at the weekend, I think the only thing to look out for, they're a big team, and there's some horrifying
names in that lineup, man.
It's set pieces. That's going to be their stock and trade this year. So. And I think that is just going to be a weakness for us this year, because I think I've said before, we're not a big team. We've got two centre-halves that are really aggressive and going to attack the ball, and Gigi if he's on the park. Beyond that, defensively, we're always going to be mismatched, as well as Joe Hart not particularly comfortable coming off his line. So that would be the concern, free kicks, corners. Beyond that, I think if we can go and play a football and pray for a wee bit of rain on Saturday night, because I think it is a good opportunity. It's quite a big park there, so it's a decent opportunity to go and play your game. And no, I'm looking forward to it. I think a couple of days off for the players a nice bit of weather as well in midweek, good training sessions. I can't wait for Sunday. I'm really excited.
As I said, some horror names, like Alan Power, like Kyle Lafferty, you know, Liam Donnelly, the guy, boy from Motherwell, who, yeah.
Ash Taylor, I think, is it?
Ash Taylor is back, yeah. So he's playing a 3-4-3. The last couple of games, I mean, they lost to Rangers. And Rangers were pretty comfortable in that game. They drew with Dundee United. Chris, how worried are you about Kilmarnock? How worried are you about the conditions? As kind of Alan's alluded to a little bit.
To go back to what I'd already said, it's never a nice place to go because it's not a pitch that, you know, befits a professional football match, to be perfectly honest, right? I mean, we don't need to go over that, but it's not, the ball bounces differently, it's just weird, right? And it's, when they went down and when Hamilton went down, you know, it wasn't necessarily about the club, well, maybe we call Marnock, but it was more about the fact that that was another playing surface that we're not playing on. If you could pick the teams to get relegated this season, it would be Livingston and Kilmarnock for me because they're just, well, Rangers.
I'd pick Rangers.
I'd pick Rangers as well.
You'd just go there before me.
But, you know, because it's not good. And then you've just read out, you know, the kind of litany of thugs, basically. I mean, Alan Power sent off against his last season in the second game, home game against St Mirren, you know. Those tackles, those lunges and that, they're his...
Kind of tackle you see in the shots he wears as well. He loves the high shots.
Absolutely. But it's, you know, that's why he's there, because they'll call it being aggressive. It's so that they can put lumps out of his guys like Ash Taylor, you know. That's the concern that I've got is that pitch isn't particularly nice to play football on, and how they're going to approach this game. They're going to kind of basically kick lumps out of us. And... again, as I said, I think that could become a sticky fixture for us. I do think they'll defend, they know that surface better than us, and they'll be given free rein to boot us up and down the park. But we'll win out, I think, just because of that quality, and because to defend against us that way for 90 minutes is extremely tiring. And I don't think they're as good as Ross County, and Ross County couldn't do it.
Yeah, Alan, obviously last season we saw Ange kind of mix it up a little bit at Livingston, when we kind of get that monkey off our back. Do you think there's any chance of that, or will it just be the same approach? Obviously, in that game he brought in like Ralston and a few players who had a little bit more physicality. Is there any chance of him doing this for this game, or is it a case of just do what we do?
I think there's the potential for it, because he did show a tendency last year to use Ralston, particularly in games where he felt like we needed more physicality. Because if you play it in your terms, you know, if players can't get close to you, then it doesn't matter. But in the early exchanges of these games, it can be, you know, quite physical. I think had Kyogo not got the goal at the weekend, I think Gigi would have been pretty close behind him. I think the fact that he did get that goal, you want to get him up and running. He's a key player in this team that you want to get rolling. So I do think we are very likely to stick with it. I also think there's as well, at this stage of the season, I think we mentioned it briefly last week, you do want to get your first 11 firing. You don't want to go to that change too quickly, because it then means you maybe don't have it in your toolkit further down the line if you need it.
Yeah.
You want that first 11, especially when they're not playing a lot of games. You want to go with your primary 11 as much as possible, because we keep talking about Champions League. You've got a derby in the 3rd of September. You want the team to go into that fully match sharp, fully match fit. That takes 3 or 4 games. So I think if I had to stick with it, I would say it would be much the same pending Rio Hatate.
Yourself, would you make it? Do you think there'll be a lot of changes in the team?
No, I don't. I think the changes that we've made thus far have been necessary, but just because of injuries, and I think that will continue to be the case. I think we touched on it last week as well. I think we would all roughly pick the exact same 11 as our kind of first choice just now. So, and I think the manager would look to do that probably for the reasons Alan said. It's about getting them up to speed and kind of getting them ticking. So I don't see too much. You know, and again, when we talk about Ralston, I think when you asked this question last week, I said the GG or Ralston would be an option. you know, I still think that's the case again, less so with Gigi again because Kyogo got the goal, but, you know, he might do that for the physicality, and I think sometimes Ralston's, you know, certainly against, he did it against Livingston last season because Ralston would get forward and get to the byline, which he was looking to do to get the ball into the box. That might be an option again against Kilmarnock because they'll probably set up quite similarly to them. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as Alan has said there, I think it will probably be Hitati for Turnbull. We know that Mieda had a slight knock, but it doesn't seem like it was a big one. It's one that's really going to affect him. So we'll find out from Ange at the press conference who's fully available, and then we can obviously look at it from there. Prediction? Alan?
I think Celtic will win, and I think it will be 3-0. And super specific, I think Kyle Lafferty will try and chip Joe Hart if he's selected, because he's a prick.
Chris, throw me a little bit. That's just that specific prediction. But yourself?
3-1. Do you want me to go into specifics? Like
a little specific one would be good. I like that, Alan. That was good.
I think we will go 3-0 up before half time. Oh. I think the goal scorers will be Jota, Callum McGregor, and Greg Taylor.
Back to his old hunting ground.
That's why, you know, seeing this fantasy that I'm making up here, you know, it's Taylor comes back to haunt old club will be the headline. Love somewhere. Somebody who's not very good at making up headlines. And I think that their goal will be blatantly offside, and it will be scored by one of them. There you go, that'll do.
That would be good. See if we could lose like a really overtly offside goal.
Contentious goal, yeah.
In a game that doesn't really matter, because then we get the kudos of potentially using it at the end of the season if we really need to, but also nobody might remember that it's in a game that doesn't matter. I like ones like that where we get the high ground and also it doesn't really affect us.
Yeah, can agree more. Just a note on Celtic FC Women. They started their campaign against Hibs on Sunday with a 9-0 victory. This week they play Partick Thistle on Sunday at 1 p.m. The Celtic Women's Football Show is released on the cynic.co every Wednesday. Here's Claire and Lorenzo with a little update.
Lorenzo, we're having a very happy discussion today about the weekend, aren't we? Update us, what's happened?
Yeah, opening day of the season, 9-0 win. You know.
Against Hibs, who we thought were going to give us a big challenge, didn't we?
Well, if anyone heard the previous show last week, it was all about how, you know, Hibs can turn up and frustrate us quite often, take points off us, and we're all a wee bit trepidatious about the transfer window we had, and then we win 9-0. So it kind of resets everything.
Yeah, it was an incredible game. The other thing to note is that attendances were up across the whole of the league as well, but particularly at the stadium in Airdrie, it felt like there was a real buzz about the place. We got off the mark really quickly. Jacinta's goal came within the first minute. She ended up scoring 3. Clarissa Larissy scored 3. There was an own goal. Hibs scored an own goal. And the last 2 goals came from our new signing, Amy Gallagher, who was scoring against her old club.
Revenge game. She had a wee bit something tasty in that game.
So she obviously had a very good game as well. And I think the main thing we were talking about when we're chatting about it is, like, the big thing is that we've lost Charlie Wellings, but it almost looks like those 3 players who, whether they scored the goals or not, all of them kind of were involved in most of the goals in some respect. Those 3 knew where each other were the whole time, Clarissa, Amy and Jacinta, and they just played really brilliantly together, didn't they?
Yeah, the biggest challenge about this summer was replacing a 40 goal striker, which you can't just go out and do. She's away to the WSL. You know, these are players.
Which was inevitable, really.
Yeah, you can't just pick up these players at our level. So the way we've done it is we've cherry-picked players, or a new player from the Scottish League, Amy Gallagher, and Jacinta, who people will be aware of, is such a talent who did not really have an end product last season. And she started this season with a hat-trick.
Yeah.
And Clarissa started last season.
I think she scored 8 goals last season, and she's already scored 3, and Clarissa scored 10, and she's already scored 3.
Well, Clarissa, when she came in, we all loved her energy, but she kind of had a very bad touch, to be generous. And then since maybe January, she's just suddenly looked like an absolute demon. Yeah. And they play incredibly fast attacking football. They are a nightmare to play against. And it looks like they're going to work as a wee trio and try and replace 40 goals and maybe improve on it.
Yeah. Other notable performances from particularly new signing Lucy Ashworth Clifford, who was excellent on Sunday, wasn't she?
Yeah, just a step up. It's nice when you get a new player to come into starting 11 and immediately look like you've improved, particularly in a window where we've lost some stars and you're kind of pessimistic about how you're going to just slot somebody new in. But Fran was obviously familiar with her, and she just looks like she's got an incredible engine on her. She plays what you can only describe as left wing for Celtic Women, which in a Fran team just means it's like an extreme version of left wing back. It's everything all the time.
The and whole inverted. Pitch.
Uh-huh. And she just seems to be flying in that role. And it's a role which means you just have to be the best player on the pitch. And she kind of looked like it for quite a lot of the time.
Yeah, she was. I was really, really impressed with her and the other player that... I mean, I feel almost bad with that result, picking out players to mention. We haven't got an awful lot of time to talk about it here, but, you know, everyone gave a fantastic performance. I thought there wasn't anyone who I thought, oh, you know, that's a bit of a worry. But the other player that I wanted to just pick out is Lisa Robertson returning, because I think we talked about the front three being able to have that freedom to play with each other, to move the ball forward and to be really attacking. And the, one of the reasons they're able to do that is that Lisa comes in, she's a really good defensive midfielder. She hoovers up all that. She's so trustworthy in terms of like getting balls and picking them up and being able to move them back forwards again. And, you know, we didn't have her last season. She was on loan at Birmingham City. We had her the season before and she was 100% one of our best players, and it was just lovely to see her back.
Yeah, she's just a veteran in a team of kind of really exciting, direct, fairly young players, and she kind of leads everyone from the middle of the park. She does all the sweeping up. She does all the dirty jobs while being maybe the highest class of player in the park. She's one of the more experienced players in the league, let alone in the park. And when your best or when one of your most veteran players is like a holding midfielder like that, it really does give you a lot of safety, particularly when you're using these wing backs who are just intent on doing nothing but bombing up and down. I think her emergence back at this in this kind of squad is perfect. When she was here with us before, when we first went professional, she was one of the best players. I think she was our player of the year, but it's because she stood out just as a cut above. Now she's like an integral cog, I think, to the way Fran's going to want to play.
Yeah, and maybe takes a bit of pressure off that leadership role that's always been having to be played for out from the back with players like maybe Caitlin and Chloe and Kelly and even Chloe Logan, you know, bringing that leadership a little bit and that experience a little bit further up the park. Really, really great to see. 9-0. The next game is on Sunday. It's at 1 p.m. It's at Peter's Hill Park, which is in Glasgow. So you can get there on the train, on the bus, if anyone fancies coming along. But it's also going to be streamed on YouTube. We will be sharing the link on the Cynic Women Twitter as soon as we know what it is. But that's great, isn't it? Not ideal, Lorenzo, that it clashes with Kilmarnock, but we would encourage everyone to watch it either live or back if they can.
Yeah, being on YouTube, it should be rewatchable on the same link. Me using my very limited YouTube knowledge, but I'm pretty sure somebody did that last season and it worked like that.
Yeah, we're all learning. It's all good. But yeah, listen to the Celtic Women's Football Show, which comes out every Wednesday. We talk about the game that's happened at the weekend and look forward to what's happening the weekend coming. But yeah, always lovely to talk about women's football with you, Lorenzo.
Hi to everyone listening to the weekly. We're coming from the past.
Yeah, hi from me from the past as well. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks again to Claire and Lorenzo for the update. If you go to thecynic.co, you'll get all the details of all the extra podcasts we're producing. We're producing currently one podcast per day, but we do actually do more than one a day on several occasions. We're going to finish. Last week we had the it was the Ross County, it was the opposition quiz, which was a huge success. Everyone loved it. Huge feedback. So this week we're going to do something a little different. Are we going to do something different every week? I think we are. I can see that they're very excited. Alan Edgar's absolutely loving it.
We'll not do something different every week because he'll get bored. We'll be back to opposition quiz next Thursday, I say.
We may be back to it.
He's not a creative mind.
Well, thanks very much for that.
Oof, touched a nerve there.
Yeah.
It was a throwaway comment, Chris. I don't really want to upset you.
Well, do you? Now, what we're doing is, okay, so we've got... 10 years ago, Celtic played Kilmarnock at Rugby Park on the... Well, not 10 years ago to the day, but the first time we played them at Rugby Park in the season 10 years ago, 2012-2013.
Glad you cleared that up.
Can I concede to Alan?
Yeah.
Congratulations, Alan.
So what I want you to do is I'm going to go from one of you each, and I want you to name the lineup. And the first person, you'll have one life once you get that wrong. Then you, that's obviously, you lose one life. If you lose two lives, the other person has to name a person, and then...
Okay.
Okay, it's actually, you know, so it's from Celtic, it's Kilmarnock 1, Celtic 3, from the 8th of December, 2012. Here's some of the trivia. This is from the fantastic, as always, Celtic Wiki. Celtic topped by 3 points with game in hand on 31 points. There was a big Kelly banner on show that said, "A club with history." Who could that be aimed at? Neil Lennon's 100th SPL game as manager. There's lots of other stuff as well. Daily Record to do, I love this about the Celtic Wiki. Daily Record do an 8-page spread for Rangers on their 140th anniversary. You couldn't make it up. Pathetic pandering to the hordes. But here we go. So, I'll come to, we'll toss a coin. I've got a coin this week. Oh. Okay. Who wants to go? I'm going to toss a coin and see who goes first. Alan, you can have the gentleman's thing. Heads or tails?
Tails.
It is... It's tails. So do I go first or second?
First.
First. Okay. So I'm looking for either the first team, I'll include substitutes. Oof. So,
keep it a long game.
Well, I mean, maybe not. It just depends. So, Alan first.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown, correct. Yes, correct. Chris Armani.
Forster.
Correct.
Samaras.
Samaras was on the bench, so that's fine.
Correct.
Correct.
Anthony Stokes.
Anthony Stokes is not part of the squad, so you're a life down. Chris Arman. Alan Egger.
Good.
Kyle.
Kyle on the bench. Correct.
Izzy.
Izzy Geary. Correct. Came on. Kyle came on for Izzy. There you go. Alan, Edgar.
Kelvin Wilson.
Kelvin Wilson. Correct. Chris Armani.
Van Dijk.
A little too soon for Van Dijk, isn't it? 2012.
Was it 2013 he came?
Yeah. Congratulations to Alan Edgar. There we go.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's it.
That's here, one all on week, son.
Yep, yeah, one all. Here was the team. Foster, Matthews, Izaguirre, Ambrose, Wilson, Mulgrew, Brown, Ledley, Wanyama. What do you call him? Noyi? What do you call him?
Lasad.
Lasad. I couldn't remember his second name. Lasad and Hooper up front. And the bench, Zaluska, Ronya, Kayal, McGeoch, Miku, Samaras, and Watt. The goals were scored by Brown, Ledley, and Samaras. Great stuff. So it's one each. One each for the big
stiff competition. That was a bit of a...
did I throw you a bit?
A bit of an anti-climax. No, it just... I mean, Kelvin Wilson and Van Dijk, you know, you just start to slip between seasons and stuff.
Of course
like that,
you do. You know, there's no,
and all
there's
that,
no, you know. You look disappointed. There's no shame in it. Don't worry.
I'm disappointed that I'm allowing you to... Kind of waste my time.
He's really taking losing
quite badly. Yeah. Slagging me off before the quiz starts to get ahead of.
Hey, listen. You remember last week? Not only did I beat you, I also got the bonus question after it. So
that's it's one each in the series. We'll be back next week with something even more interesting. I've got stuff lined up.
Disclaimer.
Don't set reminders on your phone for that.
This has been the Cynic Weekly. Alan Edgar, it's been a pleasure, sir.
Thanks very much.
Lovely stuff. Chris Armani, I'll speak to you next week.
Yep, thanks. Cheers.
I'm Chris Gallagher, and we will speak to you down the road.